All right, let's go ahead. So, I think you know where you are. You're here to talk about Power Pivot, here to talk about agility, self-service, BI, things like that, and also hopefully to have some fun. To start off, we'll talk about a little bit about me. It's a topic that I'm very qualified to discuss. So just a little background. So first of all, I spent 13 years at Microsoft, 96 to 2010, although when I write it that way, it looks like I died. I did a little bit of stuff with setup, a couple of different releases there, but primarily I was working on Excel type stuff. I worked on several releases of Excel, doing a lot of the business intelligence integration between Excel and the SQL Server teams. And then I did a little stint on the Bing search engine team, but primarily my heart was always with the data. So when they were launching this new Power Pivot project, it was back then it was a secret project called Project Gemini. I was one of the first people to sign up for that. So version one of Power Pivot has a lot of my fingerprints on it. Since leaving, I've been chief technology officer of PivotStream.com. So we're 100% about Power Pivot. And now that PowerView is coming along, we're also getting into that. But basically, since leaving Microsoft, Power Pivot, Microsoft's self-service BI stack, has paid 100% of the bills for me and 100% of the bills for the entire company. I'm also very active in the community. I've been running PowerPivotPro.com since 2009. That dates back to even when I was still at Microsoft. Two posts a week, several hundred posts up there. Just published a book. I don't think the book is really necessarily for the average person in here. It's mostly for the Excel crowd, but it does talk about SharePoint near the end. The two really important things that I want you to know that I'm not. First of all, let's do the second one first. I'm not a programmer. When I was at Microsoft, I was primarily like a designer and strategist and project manager. Okay, so I'm not. When you think about Microsoft, don't think of me. I was not writing Excel. Okay, I'm also not a SQL pro either, which is ironic because I'm a SQL Server MVP. I like to joke that I'm the only SQL Server MVP who does not know SQL at all. Right? So I'm more of a where things meet people type of person. I'm a techie. I'm a nerd, but I'm not really a programmer in the ways that you would typically think of it. I'm also not a Microsoft fanboy, so when you hear me talk about something that I really, really like, I want you to know that I actually mean it. I don't have a Windows phone, at least not yet. I don't use Internet Explorer as my browser, but I am 100% dedicated to Power Pivot, and I'm completely free to change my mind and go do something else if I want, but I don't. So everything I'm talking about today, I want you to know that I'm not just saying it, I've also bet my own career and continue to bet my own career every day on that. All right, so that's me. Let's take a little bit more risk and talk about you. See if I can tell you something about you. First of all, so hey, you've got data, more every day, and more varieties coming from lots of different places. You also have increasing pressure, especially with the economic downturn starting in 2008. The value of good decisions and the cost of bad decisions is only going up and has been going up, while at the same time, you have less money than you might have had in the past, and you certainly have less time. This isn't exactly an easy thing to deal with. That's the bad news. The good news is that I think everyone in this room, particularly everyone in this room, is very well positioned to take advantage of some things that are changing, some very, very, very big things that are changing. When I say that a revolution is starting, again, it's not one of those words that I'm going to throw around lightly. I truly believe that the nature, the whole nature of how we deal with data and how we make sense out of it, how we derive insights from it, is completely going to be different in 2 to 3 years' time than what we think about it today. There are a lot of things that we do today that we're still going to be doing, but as a total percentage of sort of data analysis, that's going to be drowned by a tremendous amount of things that are going to be done differently. And at the center of all this is the Microsoft stack, and SharePoint in particular. In fact, one of the things that we we joke about a lot is that SharePoint is actually one of the harder things to adopt out of this revolution. And if you're at a SharePoint conference, you're already got a pretty big leg up on that part of it. And then lastly, you have something in reserve, either at your company or at your customers, that you probably don't think about nearly enough. And there's a good reason why you haven't thought about this secret weapon in the past. But I'm gonna get into that and tell you why that's something that's gonna change this hidden resource of yours is going, combined with the Microsoft changing technology, is gonna change everything. All right, so here's, I only have two more slides and then we're into demos, okay? So this is pulled straight from the SharePoint speaker portal. It gives me some insight about you before I come to talk to you. Nice little pie chart here. You see that about a third of you, unless you're lying, a third of you have business intelligence as your primary workload. There's some other charts in there as well. This is the one I wanted to show you. So about a third of you, BI, really, that's great. So then let's do some other BI. Let's do some geospatial analysis, okay? Some really sophisticated geospatial. So when I first got here, I went and I walked the convention floor, the trade show. And I went looking informally. I wasn't, tabulating really formally, but I was looking for BI on the trade show floor. And I found it in about three or four places, one of them being Microsoft. Not exactly one third of the trade floor. By the way, these stars are not drawn to scale. Okay, we're talking four booths that I saw. And I'm not even really sure where this one was. I just put it over there. I don't remember. Not a third. And why is that? Why is BI so underrepresented on the trade show floor if it's so heavily represented by you? And one big reason for that is that it is a very specialized skill set. Not many people know BI, and still fewer are really good at it. And people who are good at it are worth their weight in gold. But it's characterized by, first of all, long projects. These are two quotes that I've received from my own personal customers at PivotStream. 6 months, $100,000, and then we discovered we weren't even collecting the right data. We were into a BI project, and then we realized we had to go back to square one. And then this other one's way a lot funnier. 2 weeks to get a dot on a chart. Anecdotal, for sure, but this is something that's backed up in the press as well. The projects are real BI, business intelligence projects are long. You also get a lot of unmet need because it's bottlenecked on these very valuable and very precious professionals and their skill set. And the satisfaction rates are well south of 50%. And yet, BI spending only continues to go up. It's not like people can afford to be blind. You need good information. And yet, you're not satisfied with how BI projects perceive. This gets even worse, of course, when the BI applications that you're trying to build are more sophisticated. So let's take a look at a couple of sophisticated BI applications. I'm going to change over here just a second once I'm in the right place. Okay. So you see here, I wasn't lying. I run Firefox as my primary browser. People at PivotStream, we run lots of different browsers. And so this is running, this web application, this is a BI application running completely in my browser. I'm going to refresh it really quick in case it's timed out since I warmed it up. So you see here, I'm not going to get super, super deep into this, but basically what this does, I'll take a step back for a moment. 90% of the demos I'm going to show you today are not fake data. They are real data. I'm going to show you production applications that we've built for our own needs or for our customers' needs. And all of them are things that I'm clear to show you. Okay? Even though sometimes it might seem like it's too sensitive, I am clear to show you all of these things. So this application shows me all of the retailers that are in sort of like the grocery and drugstore space in the United States and how they compete with each other. So for instance, I'm looking right now at Whole Foods. It's sort of a high-end organic grocery store. And this is listing in descending order their primary competitors. And that primary competitors are determined by the populations of the postal codes where the Whole Foods stores are located. So this right here shows me that 70.5% of the people who live near a Whole Foods also live near a CVS pharmacy. It might be that those two retail chains don't compete at all. They might be in completely different geographies, but this shows me that it's 70.5%. Actually, that's specifically for zip codes with, no, that's the 75.5, that's overall. But 80%, 81% of the zip codes or the people who live in zip codes that are young, of these ages, 15 to 24, ages 15 to 24, places with lots of teenagers, the percentage is even higher, okay? And this is the difference between the overall and the selected. So I can also change, and I can say let me be instead of Whole Foods, let me be Costco, big sort of wholesaler, warehouse type store. And you'll see that Rite Aid is the number one competitor to Costco in those zip codes. But it's a less of a competitor overall. So this shows me that when I'm looking at young people, Rite Aid is more of a threat to Costco than Rite Aid is a threat to Costco overall, sort of normally speaking. So if I was going to launch a marketing campaign aimed at 15 to 24-year-olds, even though I might normally ignore Rite Aid in terms of a competitor, in this case I might decide to focus more on them. And then I can click here and see the actual list of, I want to see the addresses of all of the stores that are subject to that overlap. And this report here shows me exactly that. So all of the Costco stores that share a zip code, a postal code, with at least one Rite Aid. And then this hyperlink here takes me to the reverse, which is showing me all the Rite Aid stores that are competing with all of my Costco stores. Okay. Real application. We built this for our customers. A bunch of people are using it. And this one's actually also available as a public demo. You can get to this one yourself. I'll give you the URL at the end. But now the really interesting thing is this BI application, very sophisticated BI application, my development environment was just Excel. And you see, this is not a .NET programmed app or anything like that. It's just an Excel spreadsheet. So here I am in my development environment, Excel. You see if I turn on the headings, I turn on the grid lines. This is just a picture that we inserted, okay? You know, I can type in here if I want. Excel was my development environment. And that's important because what I mentioned earlier, I'm not a programmer. I'm not a SQL expert. I'm not a .NET programmer. I do know Excel quite well. I worked on that product for a number of years, and I've been using it professionally for a long time. This gives me the ability to project a real application, and I built this 100% myself. I was given the data sources. I didn't build the data sources, but I built this application myself. Let me flip back. Here's your secret weapon. This is the thing I want you to get to know. People who are really good at Excel, and there's people who launch Excel every couple of days maybe, or open a document that someone sends them, we don't really think of those people as people who use Excel. People who use Excel actually do something with it. They're entering things, you know, formulas or just typing data. And of those users, only about 10% qualify for my definition of Excel Pro, which is someone who creates, as one good flag for this is, do you create pivot tables? Do you create pivot tables frequently? Who in here creates pivot tables, let's say 5-10 a week? Wow, that's much better than usual. This is the highest percentage I've ever seen. Excel pros are generally very modest about their skills. If I asked you one-on-one, I said, "Hey, I worked on the Excel team. How good are you at Excel?" You said, "Well, I'm not that good, you know." But I know you. I've seen you all over the world. Literally, it's the same person everywhere in terms of the role that you play. I got to know the persona, at least your role, not you, but your persona, very, very well over the years, and I'm still meeting you all the time. So Excel is your primary app. Mr. Excel, Bill Jelen, likes to joke that these people use Excel 40 hours a week when they're on vacation, and 60 when they're not. They're typically people in the business side. They're not IT people, okay? So you know the lingo. These Excel pros know the lingo of the business. They know the business needs. They're out there in the trenches. They're not sort of a detached separate wing that's just providing services. But they do have IT-style problems, incredibly IT-style problems. Their problems perfectly mimic the problems of an IT department. It's just that IT doesn't think of Excel pros as IT. The research we've done shows that they support about 15 people as a median. The average is higher. So 15 people or more are consuming the data, the information produced by these people in Excel. But a lot of times, the people consuming it have no idea who it came from. It can be even that distant. My cousin is a pharmaceutical sales rep, and he gets a spreadsheet sort of magically airdropped to him periodically about things he should know about. No idea where it came from. And then the other day, he put it together and said, "Ah, you, Rob, you're the guy with this, making the spreadsheets behind the scenes." I said, "Well, yeah, it's probably someone like me." The last thing that's very frustrating for me is that Excel pros don't have conferences. They don't congregate. They tend to move in as lone wolves, right? But they do travel a lot because they're part of the business. And so this is a scene that I see all the time. I am always, if you're on an airplane with me, I am looking over your shoulder. Okay? And I'm looking for one thing. I'm looking to see if you're using Excel. Because this is one place where I spot Excel pros all the time is on airplanes, and you're exposed. You're vulnerable. I can find you and talk to you. So I'm not even making this up. So on the flight in to Vegas, it's a nighttime flight. The lights are dark on the airplane, and I'm looking around. I see all these lit up laptop screens around me. And I look over. I'm on the aisle seat on my side. I look across the aisle, not even on the other aisle, but in the middle seat across the aisle, I see a guy using Excel 2010 and crunching away on some pivot tables. And because I was on Wi-Fi, so I was on my laptop, so I was able to get on Facebook and Twitter and all that. So I'll let Facebook tell you the story. This is literally, I screenshotted this from Facebook. This is what my friends saw while I was in the air. Okay. So then, I did. Imagine being him. You're sitting there, you got your noise-canceling headphones on, and you're banging away on Excel, and no one ever talks to you while you're working on Excel. No one wants to engage with someone who's working on Excel. But then suddenly this guy across the aisle, literally across the aisle, is like getting up out of his seat with his laptop and a business card, and he's showing you pivot tables and just putting them in your face and everything. Like, the guy's terrified, you know? But I do that all the time. So eventually, you know, we got off the plane. He was feeling pretty safe again, but he wasn't quite safe. I went after him one more time at bag claim. And I swear, this is something that happens to me probably one flight out of three. I've given more demos on airplanes than I've given probably everywhere else combined. And speaking of which, seeing how there's so many people in here with Excel knowledge, after this, you know, after I'm done up here, the first three people who prove to me that they're an Excel pro, I got a copy of my book for you. Okay? Remember, it's not about SharePoint. It's about how to use Power Pivot in Excel. Okay, so trade-offs. I want to make it really clear that I'm not going to tell you that sort of real hardcore BI or Excel is either one of them is really better. They actually share a lot of the same sorts of problems. And I have this one diagram that I use to show that, and this is the trade-off. So if you're going to start a real BI project, the amount of investment required just to get started is very high. It's a very high activation energy and sort of a chemistry way of describing it. And when you need to make changes to your project, sometimes it feels like a restart in terms of the amount of effort involved. It's not a very nimble process. But now once you get something good in place, over time, the cost of operating that BI system does drop quite a bit. As long as it's what you need, it kind of keeps running. I'm not saying it's completely without problem, but it gets better over time. High cost up front gets better. Excel is the opposite. Excel has a very seductive starting point. You can always get started today with Excel. IT is telling you, oh, 6 months before we can put that data in front of you. You're like, well, I can do it today, especially with my Excel pros that I, you know, keep back in the dark. But over time, though, it just gets worse. And the rate at which it gets harder to manage. We've all heard about Excel hell. There's a lot of reasons why that's real. And the ongoing cost of operating on an Excel-based system is very high, and it's not something that's easy to account for. It's costly in a way that you can't put a number on it. It has problems. Now, the thing about Power Pivot is that, I don't have the animation here, but basically, Power Pivot is about blending the startup cost and agility of an Excel-type environment with the ongoing low maintenance and flexibility and robustness and security of a real BI environment. So you can sort of imagine Power Pivot being more of a flat line through here. That's what we've seen in practice as well. It's not just theory. I didn't believe Power Pivot was going to deliver this when I was an engineer on the team. I had to go out into the wild and use it before I became so excited about it. I wasn't as excited about it when I was working on it as I am now. Okay, so in order for Excel to have those sorts of characteristics, some of them anyway, of the high-end BI systems, there's a lot of weaknesses in Excel that have to be compensated for. They have to be eliminated. And I've got a series of demos that show you, sort of one by one, a lot of these weaknesses falling away. All right, so this is not a very fancy report. It's not meant to be. This is a workbook, and I want you to know that I am running this every demo you see is running on my Ultrabook that cost me about $800, and it only has 4 gigabytes of RAM. It is not a beast of a machine that I've got up here. It's a very tiny little airplane-friendly laptop computer. Now, over in the Power Pivot window, if you haven't seen Power Pivot before, I'm still running this, in this part of the demo, I'm still running the 2010 version of Excel with Power Pivot version 2, which released with the, so many different version numbers, the Denali release of SQL. Thanks, Lee. I forgot to turn my email off. Let's do that. All right. In the Power Pivot window, I apologize, especially people who are in the back, unless you're close to the screen. I didn't install Zoomit on this computer, but I have in this table in the Power Pivot window, which is saved into the same file, this Excel file, on this sales tab, I have 12.5 million rows of data in this workbook. Now that's pretty impressive, you know, the 1 million row limit that Excel has had for a couple of years and the 64,000 row limit before that. But then over here in this table called ACV, I have 141 million rows also in this workbook. And then I'm not done. There's actually another table, MACV, that has 162 million rows in it. There's over 300 million rows of data in this workbook right now loaded in RAM on my Ultrabook. This is not smoke and mirrors. This is actually happening. And then over here in this report, I'll turn the grid lines back on really quick. Not the grid lines, the headings. I want you to see that this pivot table that I've got has about 10,000 rows in it. It's a 10,000 row report with two columns of numbers. This column is working against the 162 million row table. It's an aggregation and a filter against that. And this one's working against the 140 million row table. And by the way, this is retail data from one of our customers who has about several hundred stores in New York City. This over here is filtering by date. So when I click one of these slicers and change the target date that I want to look at, the machine has to rip through all those rows and find the ones that count and then produce 20,000 cells of results that are aggregates against it. There's a lot of work going on here. And when I change it, it's about that fast. So this depends a lot on sort of the nature of your data in terms of how much you can fit in one workbook. But because the compression engine underneath Power Pivot is, it's not, I wouldn't call it particular, it's just that you can't I can't tell you, hey, it's a 15x compression ratio or something like that. I can tell you that this workbook's about 1.2 gigabytes on my desktop, and I can tell you that the original SQL data sources that fed it were north of above 60 gigabytes of SQL data that's now on my laptop and running. Now, just to show you here, when I was giving a demo of this on an airplane about a month ago, on my way to give another talk, I'm not kidding, the guy next to me asked me, how long would 300 million rows be if you printed them out? The answer is it's about 1,000 miles or 1,600 kilometers of data. Literally, if you printed out the paper that you printed out on, would stretch from about Boston to Atlanta in the United States. So when I'm over here in the Power Pivot window, switch back to, when I'm in the Power Pivot window and I do this, I grab, let's say, this scroll bar and I just kind of zip to the bottom, and we moved it about several hundred thousand miles an hour to get through all of that data. It's a very interesting visualization. I was talking to Russ here up front before the talk, and there is a limit to how much data Excel will hold. There's a 2 gigabyte hard cap on the file size, and you can also run into other caps that get pretty close to that. But basically, about 2 gigabytes is how big your workbook can get. While I'm on the topic, this really requires 64-bit Excel. Power Pivot is the only reason that I can think of to run 64-bit Office. I don't need 64-bit Outlook for anything, but I do need 64-bit for Power Pivot, and it doesn't even really matter how much RAM you have. 32-bit Excel, 32-bit Power Pivot won't be able to get you anywhere close to these data volumes, just because of the nature of the architecture. Anyway, if you reach the point where either you're one of these workbook models that you've built, it can't hold enough data, or it's become too mission critical to the business that you're not comfortable with it being sort of an Excel thing anymore, the heavyweight product, the long-standing professional product from SQL Server, Analysis Services, now offers Analysis Services Tabular, which is table-oriented. I think of it as being human being and Excel people type oriented. But I can go into Visual Studio with Tabular Analysis Services, and I can just load a Power Pivot workbook straight in as a project, just import it, and all of the design, all of the work that I've done immediately gets transformed into this heavier weight server-side product. So you can sort of think of it as IT, perhaps. You could sort of take ownership of it and extend it, manage it with higher end security and things of that sort, as well as basically limitless, practically limitless data volumes. All right, let's do another demo. Okay, and here we go. So again, this is an application that's production. I'm gonna go ahead and refresh it again just to clear any timeouts. So one of our customers is Dwayne Reed. Does anyone know what Dwayne Reed? Raise your hand. You know what Dwayne Reed is? So you're probably in from New York City. So Dwayne Reed is basically the Walgreens, the drugstore of choice in New York City. A couple hundred stores. They basically dominate that market. There are places in Manhattan you can stand and see more than one Dwayne Reed at a time. And you can imagine with that population density, these drugstores do a tremendous amount of transactions every day. And we do all of their point of sale analysis for them. It's all done in Power Pivot. And we also help them share this with their suppliers so that their suppliers can have insight. So like if you're Procter & Gamble, Procter & Gamble can see how their products are selling in Manhattan. And that's interesting from a strategic standpoint because Manhattan's a very influential market. But it's also interesting for the local sales reps from Procter & Gamble who want to make sure that the right products are being placed in the right stores and things of that sort. So this isn't just a solution for Duane Reade, it's for several hundred of their suppliers as well. Everyone's consuming it strictly in the browser. No one's having to install anything in order to do this. You do not need Excel installed. So think about this web version that I'm showing you here, even though we now know that this is essentially an Excel workbook that we've built behind the scenes. The web is the runtime. Excel is just the design time in sort of in a robust Power Pivot environment. Excel is sort of the development console. And the web, which is SharePoint, is the way that you publish and share. And this defeats many, many, many problems that are associated with Excel. It turns out that probably half of the problems people associate with Excel are actually not problems with Excel at all. They're just problems with files. Files are a really, really ineffective way to share applications. This is one distinction I like to make, is that Excel suffers quite a bit in terms of image from its close association with things like Word and PowerPoint. Not that those are bad applications, it's just that Word and PowerPoint are places that you put content. An Excel workbook, especially the kinds of things that are built and that power well over 90% of the business decisions in the world by these Excel pros, these are much more, it's a much more accurate representation to call them applications. And, you know, again, though, when we see it, we all, you know, the human nature just to see it, they're all Office documents producing, I'm sorry, Office applications producing documents. But Excel, and when I worked on the Excel team back at Microsoft, we used to take a step back all the time and say, if we view Excel as a cleverly disguised application development environment, it allows us to think of ways we can improve it that we wouldn't otherwise do. So we used to go and look at actual, like, Visual Studio development environments and see what kinds of features that programming languages have and see which of those we could bring to Excel. And we wouldn't call them that, but they were ways to make things more robust. Okay, so only when you start to think about Excel as an application development environment can you really start to understand the implications here. And this was on a slide a few back, but at 30 million Excel pros, I did some research that it's estimated to be only about 7 million Java developers in the world and about 2 million SQL Server pros in the world. So this is sort of like it's one of my favorite themes, is sort of this dark matter thing. A tremendous amount of application development is being done every day by these 30 million people, but we don't really think of it as such. Once we go to the web, though, we can start to appreciate it in that light. Okay. So this application here, I, the consumer, I have no ability to download this and get at the source. I can't download all of the data that's powering this. I can interact with it, but I can't walk off with the equivalent of the data mart, all of the transactions behind the scenes. I'm only allowed to do what the Excel pro allowed me to do when he or she built this report. I can download for printing purposes, but it's really just a print to Excel type of export thing. That also means that I can't modify it, which is another one of the big things that happens with Excel, and I can't be using a stale version because I always know where to go. It's a URL that I'm going to. It's not that file that I saved to my desktop and I've been using for the last 6 weeks, even though someone fixed a really bad bug and has been trying to get a hold of me. they don't even know that I have the workbook is part of the problem. And another thing about this is that from the IT standpoint is that we can track usage. We can track what's there because now everything that's on the SharePoint server being broadcast is in the daylight. So we can see it, we know what's being used, we can track usage statistics behind the scenes. But even setting all that aside, just having a place that I can go and look and see what the business is doing is a huge, huge, huge advantage from the IT standpoint. Okay, so fun little demo here. We're looking at the products in the adult beverage category at Duane Reade in New York City. And so we're looking at all of New York City right now, and you see that the number one selling alcoholic beverage product in New York City over the past 13 weeks is Stella Artois. What's really interesting is that when I gave this demo a month ago, this is a demo that I can't dial in because it changes all the time. The data is always changing. 1 month ago, roughly, Corona, number two here, was number one. And when I filtered down to Manhattan, just to show me, because there's multiple different regions of New York City. When I filtered down to Manhattan in the demo about a month ago, I was actually in. How does email keep popping up? At that point in Manhattan, Stella was the number one beer a month ago. This makes me wonder, just today I saw that this had changed, and I'm wondering whether we should start tracking on behalf of Duane Reade and Walgreens, whether or not Manhattan is a leading indicator of what's gonna happen outside in the surrounding boroughs. Because Stella was number one, it was sort of an outlier back then. If I go and I look at the Bronx, I see that the product mix is very different. We think of New York City as being one place, one city, but it actually has many different subcultures within it. You see, Corona is still number one in the Bronx, but then we have things like these pina colada type drinks and things like that that are showing up, which don't even make the top 20 in some of the other places. So very different demographics in different areas of New York City. One last benefit of using the SharePoint server version of PowerPivot is once I've published my workbook up there, I can schedule this to auto-refresh. So the Excel Pro, one of the things that happens to Excel Pros is that every time they make a really good report, they now become shackled to that really good report for the rest of their career or until they completely leave the company or something like that. And so Excel Pros, a lot of them end up going into work a lot earlier than anybody else because everyone expects to show up at work with the latest data. So they go in and they crunch out the latest version of the spreadsheet, lots of manual effort, which also can lead to mistakes, just to have it ready for everybody. This way, if I'm actually encouraged to do good work rather than being penalized for doing good work, which is sort of how it works for Excel Pros today. Okay? Does anyone have any questions so far? There's people that I could hear anyway. Wanna? No? All right, we'll jump in if you have any. Oh, the question is this 2012 or 2010? Right now, what I'm showing you here, this is still, I have some 2013 coming up, but this is still 2010. Remember, I'm showing you production stuff, and we can't just go charge headlong into each new version. We gotta learn, we gotta do a lot of testing about it, just like everybody else. So we have test versions of the 2013 release, but these are our live servers today. Now, this doesn't look necessarily like normal 2010 SharePoint, because we put a lot of work into making sure that it doesn't feel like, it's important to us that this not feel like Excel in the sky, and it's also important that it doesn't feel like a document collaboration portal. It just needs to feel like a place you go to consume data, like a normal website. It is secure, there is, you know, sign-in required. But other than that, we try to take everything about this that looks like Excel, take everything about this that looks like SharePoint, and just mute it. So that's why it looks different than what you would see from 2010, typically. We put a lot of work there. But no, this is not, right now what you're seeing is not 2013, it's 2010. Okay? Yes? Oh, okay. So the question is about licensing. I gotta be a little careful about that. Even when I was a Microsoft employee, I would have run from that question. So the question is, does it require the enterprise version of the server to do what I'm doing? I can speak to what we do. I would never pretend to be the ones that could give you a definitive answer on exactly what works for you and that kind of stuff. But Excel services, the server version of Excel that's required to render this report, is an enterprise feature of SharePoint. And PowerPivot, in the 2010 release, also ran in SharePoint. So we have actually separate servers that run PowerPivot, but it's also a SharePoint member of the SharePoint farm. It required SharePoint Enterprise, and then it was a SQL Enterprise license required, again, in the 2010 wave, to also operate the PowerPivot server. So the PowerPivot server was a two enterprise license. That's all changing. It's still very enterprise-y in the new wave, but I'm not as comfortable speaking to the new wave as I am to what we're running in production right now. Okay? Things have gotten better in some ways. I don't think you have to run SharePoint on the Power Pivot servers anymore in the new wave. So you can kind of save one license there. But that's about as far as I'm willing to say. Okay? You're welcome. Yeah. How long does it take to get the data into this workbook? So we're pulling from SQL Server when I'm authoring this, okay? To hit the refresh button and pull all of the data for this particular workbook, it's probably about a 15-minute process to pull it in and recompress it and then save the file, that kind. It's not incremental. There's no way to incrementally pull data into Power Pivot V1. You can with that tabular version that I showed you, the Visual Studio version. You can just pull the latest, but just to give you an idea, if you have 3 years of history in your database and you refresh every day, even though you only need one additional day's worth of data, you've got to pull all 3 years all over again. It basically drops everything and starts over. Yeah. Yeah, we've considered the tabular model, but you know what's funny, like, we're very, very, very pragmatic, and we've gotten a long way without having to go to the tabular model. And so we're not in a huge hurry to get there. I'm sure there's going to be lots of benefits of us making that switch, but there's going to be some drawbacks as well. Like right now, hey, these are workbooks. So we still have really only dipped our toe into the tabular world, the tabular SSAS. Okay, so I'll take one more. The question is, what do they get when they click download snapshot? If you're familiar with Excel services, there's a download snapshot feature there. It basically is like print to Excel. So I get an Excel workbook that downloads, but it only has what I see. So right now, because I've sliced to the Bronx, I would just be seeing data for the Bronx in my downloaded snapshot. The Power Pivot model would be empty. There isn't any heavy data. It's going to be a very small file. And it's not going to be interactive. I won't be able to change anything once I've downloaded it. Typically, people do it so that they can take it. The charts are still there. So people do it so they can take charts and put them into PowerPoint decks. They can go convince people of things. Or they use it to print because they can change margins and things like that. Those are the two primary reasons why download snapshot is there. And it's probably the number one most used feature for our people who are using our applications that we build. Download snapshot is very, very, very heavily used. Okay? All right, let's flip back over for a second. If for no other reason to remind me what my next demo is. Okay, so data mashups. This is great. So if you're a real BI pro, you're aware of this thing called dimensional modeling. And when I explain this to Excel people, I say, really, it's just the idea of working with multiple tables at the same time without having to mash them all into one big wide table like we always have to do in Excel. So let me show you. This one's kind of fun. I haven't opened it yet. So this will show you that Power Pivot, it loads the entire file off of the disk before it gets started. So there is sort of a delay when you're loading it. But once it's loaded, now the disk isn't touched at all. It's all in memory. And look, I didn't even bother to close my 300 million row workbook. I've got like four workbooks open at the same time with large data volumes in it. So this is kind of a fun data set. I told you everything was going to be real. This is still real. We grabbed, for demo purposes, we grabbed the Internet UFO sighting database from online. We loaded it into Power Pivot so we could look at things like, hey, what UFOs, what are UFO sighting trends and things like that. So I can even sort by different things. So like right now we're sorting by, this is by US state. So Nevada has the highest sightings per 100,000 residents. I can change that sort order to be something like total sightings per year, which is California. I can flip around. I can even look at different shapes, like, hey, I want to see who's the leader in cylinder-shaped UFOs. It's still California. And we could just focus on the 1990s, things like that. Washington State wins cylinders in the 1990s. Cylinder-shaped UFOs, That's a Washington specialty. Now, our CEO at PivotStream is kind of a creative guy, and he said, you know, I'd like to see this cross-referenced against drug usage statistics in the United States. And you know how this would be in the real BI world. You say, well, we're not going to put drug usage statistics into our data warehouse. The data warehouse is for serious things like, you know, UFO sightings. So, but in Power Pivot, even if you've got two different data warehouses, you know, the UFO data warehouse and the drug usage data warehouse, you can still build a model and a report that operates against both of them simultaneously. And so I'll show you, there's a bunch of tables in here, but really only a couple of them are important. I don't know why I had that set to update when I open it. That's what you call a mistake, setting a large table to auto-update before you do a demo. Okay, so observations. This table has about 50,000 rows. It's all the different sightings that have happened over the years since 1900 in the US. And then we have things like hallucinogen use, also by year. And if you have some column that's in common between your data sets, in this case, year is in common between our drug usage stats and our sightings. As long as you have one, or sometimes even more than one, column that's common between your data sets, you can mash them up in a, it's in an eye blink, basically. It requires a third table sometimes, most of the time, actually. But it is so fast. I built this myself. Once I had the data, it took me about 15 minutes to splice these together to give me an integrated view and a comparison between the two. So, now imagine being me, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, you're just giggling that you get to do this. And then finally, after, you know, it was more formatting than anything, this comes out. All right, so normally I'm in a smaller room, so I'm able to walk up to the screen and point at things. So I'm going to have to use my mouse pointer here. So this thick tan line, this is overall sightings. UFO sightings in the United States from 1930 through the year 2000. And you see that there's a kind of a bump here in the 60s and 70s, and it kind of goes flat, and there's a huge spike in the 90s. So this line here, this blue line, that's LSD usage. And you see how its peak in its rise perfectly parallels the rise in sightings of UFOs in the same era. But what happens here, when this is taking off, LSD usage is still relatively flat. This orange line is the usage of ecstasy. And look at that. I mean, it couldn't be any, I mean, again, correlation and causality are not the same thing. We haven't established anything at all here. Might be that, you know, UFO pilots love watching people who are using ecstasy, but the relationship is striking. And imagine, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm the only human being on the planet that knows this. And it wasn't difficult. So I promise you, I've done a series of blog posts on this, that there are a million things like this in your business, there are a million things like this in the world, that all it takes is the ability to quickly splice things together to spot it. And the amount of effort required to do that sort of splicing today precludes you from even thinking about it. And being a business person, being someone that's in directly engaged with the business, which is where the Excel pros live, that's sort of a prerequisite for having these sorts of these theories, these ideas, things to test. You know, the IT side of things, well, they're serving everybody. And, you know, if you are IT, your specialty is the tool set. You need to know about the business for sure, but your primary focus is infrastructure and things of that sort. The people out there, you know, in the trenches are the one, they're specializing in the business. The problem is that we've had this separation of the ability to execute has been in one set of brains, sort of the IT and BI pro sorts of brains, and then the ability to, and the desire and need to iterate on business problems has been in another set of brains. And that has created, you know, in my experience now looking back, that is responsible for all those things I was talking about in terms of low satisfaction and slow projects and expensive projects. It's because it's not a technology problem, it's a human problem. it's forcing these minds to do like this Vulcan mind meld and share the capabilities of both domains to reach some sort of common ground. That's the expensive thing. That's the thing that takes time. Okay? Okay, budget versus actuals. This is a real problem, very common. It's a lot like UFOs and drug use. You've got two different tables. You've got one table that has all of your sales transactions. That might be millions of rows, and they're very granular. It's on a particular day, a particular person bought a particular thing at a particular store. But you certainly didn't budget. If you were putting together a budget, you did not budget that a human being would come into store 65 on that particular day and buy that particular product. You set more, coarser goals, like we'll sell so many of X per month in a particular region. And believe it or not, in Excel, comparing those two data sets and seeing how well you're doing actually versus your budget is very, very, very difficult, at least until Power Pivot. And it's the same sort of problem as the UFO problem. Remember, I only had one row per year in my drug usage stats, but probably several thousand rows of observations of UFO sightings per year in different states and all of that. So splicing together data of different granularities has never been a strength of Excel, and now it actually is. Now, this is the only time that I'm going to show you fake data. I apologize. This is AdventureWorks data, and this is one of the files that I used when I was writing my book. But here you see, let's look behind the scenes here. Look in the Power Pivot window, and I have a budget table. And you see that it's based on year, month, and territory, and subcategory of products. So it's got about 2,000 rows in it, and then I have a sales table which goes much more granular, down to individual SKUs and individual transactions, and about 60,000 plus rows. This is an Excel pro's nightmare, but it's so common that they're doing it all the time. But again, here, all I have to do, and I can show you in the diagram view, this isn't going to look as simple as I want it to because there's a lot more tables in here. This is a great feature, by the way. All I have to do is have my budget and my sales table link to things like a common year-month table. And the relationship between those is really just clicking on the columns that match and say, link these together. I'm not going to go terribly deep in that. But it really, and even for an Excel person who's been writing VLOOKUPs their whole life, this is really, really easy to do. You don't start off in this diagram view. This is something that you look at to see what you've done sort of in the rearview mirror. But so I have this formula here. It's called sales versus budget. Let's take a look at that. It's a very human readable formula, isn't it? One of the things I like to joke about, again, with Excel being a development environment, is that Excel is the only development environment and the most successful development environment by far that names your variables for you. If you're an IT pro, you kind of know what I'm talking about. I want to talk about things like total sales, but to Excel, total sales is not total sales. It's cell A7. And you better remember that A7 was total sales, and way over here in column AH was your budget. And so even your formulas are hard to read in Excel and make sense of. In Power Pivot, everything's done by name. It's pretty straightforward, right? Total sales minus total budgeted sales divided by total budgeted sales. That's how well we're doing as a percentage relative to our budget. And that's operating across both of those tables, the budget table and the sales table, and it's giving me percentage values. And this is another great opportunity to demonstrate another advantage of Power Pivot. If I was as an Excel pro put in the many hours of work it would take just to produce this one simple report that I'm showing you here, and then I give it to you, let's say you're my manager or something like that, and you say, well, that's great, but man, I'd love to see that broken out by something else. And all my work that I put into this, when I want to reshape it, to give you a different shape report, everything I did before is now 90% plus throwaway. I start basically from scratch. None of the logic that I produce in normal Excel is what I would call portable. It's not reusable. But this formula that I wrote here to produce this number is portable, and I don't even really know what I even really want to show here. We'd go by sales territory. We'll put country on here, and the formula still works. It just automatically adapts to any new report shape. If you're a BI professional, this is like, man, I've seen this forever. If you're not an Excel person, you're like, well, again, I'm not all that excited about this. But if I could go to a conference that was just Excel people, this would have people just screaming. This is what I just showed could be their whole week. And I'm not kidding. And it's a click now. So you want to be able to get answers faster. This isn't a matter of like, hey, 50% faster or 75% faster. This is so much faster that you will actually now go after and answer questions that wouldn't have even occurred to you as a business before because you can. It's not just a matter of degrees. This is a fundamental change. Any questions on this so far? Yeah. All right. Okay, so I want to make sure that that you're not getting the wrong message here. I'm not telling you that that you should take your BI, if you have a BI team or a BI department, or if you're a BI professional. I'm not telling you that you should get rid of that team or anything like that. Let's talk about me for a moment. I need the database people. I need the data people who shape data, store it, clean it, all of that kind of stuff. Like, I can't do, in fact, I need you even more with Power Pivot than I did before, because there are so many things now. Like, if you can give me the data in the right shape, then I can set it up to refresh itself every night, and I'm not in there manually shaping the way the columns are and all of that. There's a reason for me now, the Excel Pro, a very strong incentive for me to go to the IT department and say, you know, if you gave me a table that looked just like this, I can be very, very precise about it. Just like this. Here's a quick sketch. If you can give me that, it will change my life. And then you look at me and say, really? That would change your life? And I say, yeah, that would change my life. And you say, well, that only takes me 5 minutes. Okay. That's how it always works. At PivotStream, the same dynamic plays out every day. We didn't plan it, but we do have a database person that I work with all the time. We have a couple of them, actually. And I have never once gone to them with a request that was challenging for them. But I go to them with lots of requests. They're never idle. Once a model is sort of stabilized, we're not like constantly changing SQL Server under the hood. But in the course of development, it's very iterative, okay? And I want to show you kind of briefly what that looks like. And this is getting back to that problem I mentioned earlier, another one of my favorite diagrams. So if you think about the way that a BI project operates today, on this side we have someone that has the ability to execute. They have the knowledge of the tool set, which is very, very specialized and difficult knowledge to have. And over here we have someone on the business side who has a need or an idea, as well as all of the subtleties about the business in their head. And we communicate with ourselves. If you think about communicating with yourself, you know, you can also think of that as just thinking. That happens at a very, very, very fast pace. If you want to put it in sort of an internet metaphor, it's broadband, it's T1, it's fiber. That's the speed with which you communicate with yourself. But when I have to go and communicate what I know to someone else, that's a very, very, very skinny pipe. It's more like 2400 baud. And it's also very noisy. It's full of mistakes. I'm a terrible communicator, even though that's my job, okay? And the other person on the other end is terrible at understanding it. This is not because they're flawed, it's just because of we're just humans. And if you look at this accounting here, I put it in here, anything that's blue is the communication cost of the project. The actual cost of sitting down and typing the right code and building the right model, just the keystrokes that were the right ones, at the console, that's not very much. But all of the mistakes, all the iteration, all the time spent in meetings, that's where the cost goes. And when you put some of these tasks together in one brain, you remove that bottleneck. But I still need, so here in the middle, think about this as being sort of an IT role that's responsible for storing, securing, maintaining, and shaping data, cleaning it. And these being Excel pros, maybe there's not that many of them. This BI pro is no longer bottlenecked one at a time with a single business need. You can now serve many different people. And the work that you do actually becomes impactful sometimes 30 minutes after you've done it. The business is actually seeing something different 30 minutes after you made a view. Russ, who's sitting here in the front, we had this experience when I visited. It was really interesting. I said this whole spiel, and then like half an hour later, it happened. Yeah, well, I got this view. Changed the shape of this table. Boom, new report, new model, everything's going great. So does this make sense? I'm kind of rushing through it. I could give a whole talk, literally a whole talk, just on this collaboration and where it makes sense, what should happen at each level. I do not shape data. I am not a SQL Server person. I don't shape it. I don't store it. I don't maintain it. The other point I want to make here is that a lot of times in BI projects, the data warehouse or the data mart, the place where you're storing your data, takes on sort of a life of its own. It becomes a product. And I think that's, this is where I can draw some fire. I think that's actually sort of a mistake. I think you should just go bare bones. I think you should, you know, in terms of a SQL expert, just think of it as a very simple star schema starting point. Don't put a lot of time into it, and then immediately put that in front of your Excel pros, your deputized Power Pivot people, your partners. And they'll come back and tell you immediately what's missing. And they'll tell you what's missing in a prioritized way, too. They'll tell you, this is our most important need, and it's not ambiguous. It's, I need a table that looks like this. The specification is incredibly precise. Not long meetings about requirements, okay? And a month later, that data warehouse or data mart that you started off with might look quite a bit different than you started, but just naturally you did the things that were needed and you didn't do the things that weren't. It happens so much faster. And one last point I want to make on this is that Power Pivot is not something that you just say, hey, if you use Excel, we're giving you Power Pivot. No, it really is these people, these Excel pros who are already functioning like shadow IT, the ones who are building and sharing insights in Excel with their work groups. Those are the people you go after and put Power Pivot in their hands. And they become the sort of the ambassadors between IT and the business. There's a reason and a benefit for collaboration and not just a reason to fight. Okay. Let's do a couple of 2013 demos. I've had fun playing with this while I was getting ready for the conference. Oh, don't look. Cheating. All right, maybe not. Okay, so PowerView, a new visualization technology. I was told that I needed to cut down on the number of slides that I had before this talk. So what did I do? I just put some pictures in Excel, put them in PowerView. You see, there's a slicer here. It's just very, very hard to see. Who's seen this movie? Jake Gyllenhaal is a pharmaceutical sales rep in this movie, just like my cousin. But they don't talk about the spreadsheet in this movie. For him, the only physician he needs to focus on, they just tell him, hey, you just need to go talk to Hank Azaria. You need to convince Hank Azaria to prescribe your products. I think Jake ends up selling Viagra in this movie eventually. So they really short-circuit a lot of things here. I'm thinking that the answer isn't always going to be Hank Azaria. So one of our customers is a pharmaceutical company, and this is real data, but it's been obfuscated. I've kind of hidden some things about it, so I'm not giving away any secrets. So let's pretend that I'm Jake Gyllenhaal, and I've been assigned to push my product and make sure that my product has good mind share and awareness amongst physicians. And I've been assigned to Louisiana. So here I am in PowerView, and I know that this might not be super huge for you to see, but we'll zoom in, okay? I've spent the past few years working in Louisiana, and each one of these circles represents a physician. And the orange portion of the wedge is the market share that I have with that physician in terms of their prescriptions versus my competitors. And I have about 5 or 6 competitors, so for me to be doing this sort of fraction is really good. That's a very good result for me. My managers are very happy with the job that I have done in Louisiana. So happy, in fact, that they said, let's send you to Nevada. Let's send you to Las Vegas. We're doing pretty well up here in the Carson City area, but Las Vegas, we're having a problem. We need you in there. We need your magic touch. So how many of you have heard of the traveling salesman problem? Okay, so if you took computer science in college like I did, which I never really used, this is one of the problems they tell you is completely not solvable using a computer. You can't decide what the optimal route is to take to hit all these different places you want to stop. It's impossible. But we can get pretty close. So if I look at the map of Las Vegas and the physicians there, you can see that, and the size of the circle is the total amount of prescriptions, by the way. So a big circle that's mostly blue is opportunity for me. This is someone that I want to go after and turn into more of an orange wedge than they are currently. So wherever I see large dots with lots of blue is where I kind of want to go. And so you can see that I could get some really good density traveling around if I went through this region here. And if I keep zooming in, so these are real physicians and their addresses. It's just that I've changed the fractions of the prescriptions so that you don't really know what's going on there. But the physicians are real. If I keep zooming in here, you'll see that we are right here. This is Mandalay Bay, right there. So if I'm Jake Gyllenhaal and I'm going to be traveling around, I'm going to leave today. I'm going to go jump out on South Las Vegas Boulevard, turn left, get on I-15, and head up here to the Promised Land. You can tell me that the traveling salesman problem isn't solvable, but it actually it's something we can definitely do. We're going to use this to death at PivotStream. I promise you. As soon as we get the servers dialed in, make sure that everything's running effectively. We are going to use this to great benefit. I was going to do something with this with the New York City data. I was going to show you the effect of the power outage. But it turns out that the density of stores in Manhattan is so great that I couldn't get to anything other than dots ever on that map. So we'll work on that a little bit. But yeah, this is PowerView. This is, again, a workbook. I built this, to be perfectly honest with you, I built this here in my hotel room in Vegas. And I didn't show up with this. I built this sort of in the last 48 hours, and it didn't take me very long at all. Any questions about this? Does this sit on, sorry?
Is this a separate product?
Okay, so I should, I didn't bring the other laptop. But PowerView in Office 2013 is now a new sheet type in Excel. So this would work on my desktop, just like I was showing you desktop demos of Power Pivot before. But this is in the web, so the same thing. I published the workbook to the server, and now people can use it even though they don't have the workbook, and they don't even need Excel installed in order to do this. So again, Power Pivot is and PowerView are great on the desktop, but we view the desktop as our development environment, and this is where things become professional, is on the server. Okay, any other questions about this? All right? How are we doing time-wise? We're down to 5 minutes. I didn't expect to get this far. Let me show you one more. I can't take credit for this demo. This was created by two friends of mine. They're both still at Microsoft, Sean Boone and Danny Hodder. So credit where credit is due. I did not build this, but this is the Olympics data set done in PowerView. And you see that it shows me participation across different countries by sport. So in badminton, and then male and female, orange is male, blue is female. You can sort of see across the world, boxing, not surprised that's more of a male thing, I suppose. Road cycling, things like that. These are all different PowerView sheets in a workbook that's now published too. This is medal count. I say, just show me gold medals. And then the really interesting one is the race for medals. So this shows in elapsed time how the medal race went. So China has a lead here, and the United States catches up and pulls ahead. China pulls ahead throughout the couple of weeks, and then eventually the United States pulls ahead and wins in total medal count. So again, all these are just features of PowerView. They're now built into Excel, and when I publish to the server, they're available as well. Okay. All right, so I think that's really all I've got available for questions. Stick around up here for a little bit until the next speaker kicks me out. Remember, I'm contesting off three books.